Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, it's Friday, which means we start with a look back at the week in the news. We'll begin with politics today, in particular, a look at Democrats, who on Wednesday chose their new leadership team. As expected, California Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi was nominated as the next Speaker of the House.
It was so inspiring to hear my colleagues place my name in nomination once again for Speaker of the House.
Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton has been an outspoken Pelosi critic. He says her victory is not inevitable in January.
No, I think it's time for a new generation of leadership in the House.
The Massachusetts delegation gained some influence. Congresswoman Catherine Clark is the new Democratic Caucus Vice Chair.
Democrats have been sent a clear message by the American voters that they want Congress to get to work.
And Congressman Moulton maintains, though, that the Democratic Party is going to have to evolve.
We're Democrats who are willing to talk about solutions for transition here. I mean, I think that's a reasonable position to take. But there's no question that we want to see change.
Joining us for our Week in Review panel this week to talk about these and other stories is former Newton Mayor Seti Warren. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Also with us, political analyst and senior fellow for legal policy with the Independent Women's Forum, Jennifer Braceras. Jennifer, welcome back as usual.
Thanks. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Well, I want to ask you both about this. So is there a big rift in the Democratic Party, similar to maybe what we saw with the Republicans and the Tea Party? Seti Warren.
Well, look, Congressman Moulton, as we all remember, ran against the establishment. This is something that he's felt strongly about, talking about a new generation of leadership in place. As a mayor who's run for reelection and been challenged, I think it's certainly a healthy dialogue to have. And I also think that it'll make Congressman Pelosi a stronger leader. We have seen her in this last week not only attain support from members and switching over from folks that were going to be against her, but she's also broadened her coalition and she's broadened her policy agenda. So I think it'll make her a much stronger leader for the Democratic Party.
Okay, Seth Moulton may have been the anti-establishment candidate, but there's also the quote, when you shoot at the king, you better not miss, right? So was this a wise move on the part of Seth Moulton?
I think if Leader Pelosi does what I think she's going to do, it will not be an unwise move for Congressman Moulton, because Congresswoman Pelosi knows she needs to have a broad range of support to get things done in a very complex scenario in Washington. One of the reasons why I think a lot of Democrats wanted her in that place is because of what's happening with the presidency, what's happening with the challenges that are coming from the Russia probe and all the rest. So I believe that if she does what she says she's going to do, it won't necessarily come back to haunt Congressman Moulton.
Look, I think nobody wanted Nancy Pelosi in the speakership more than Donald Trump. I think this plays into his hands beautifully. She creates an excellent foil, the San Francisco liberal. Personally, I think she should have stepped aside for the good of her party. I think Congressman Moulton is absolutely right. It's time for new leadership. And it's an interesting time in politics where I think party affiliation doesn't mean as much as it used to. And so there's an opportunity for the Democrats to bring in people who are dissatisfied with the Republican Party. But they're not going to do it as long as the face of the party is Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I want to, in line with that, I want to play another piece of tape here from Seth Moulton this week calling for more change. Here's what he said.
If we simply respond by reinstalling the same three top leaders, it's not just Pelosi here. It's three top leaders in the House of Representatives who have been stagnant in the same position for more than a decade. That's not the right message for a country that needs to move forward, for a party that needs to respond to a totally different world. It's not the same world as we had in 2006.
And so, Senator Warren, I mean, is it the same thinking here? Because Pelosi, Maryland Rep. Steny Hoyer, South Carolina Rep. Jim Clyburn all voted in to maintain their leadership positions here. So while, again, Moulton might be anti-establishment, it seems as if his colleagues rallied behind the old guard here.
Well, his colleagues are concerned about the future of the country, and they're concerned about the very complex environment that we're going into with the Mueller investigation, in addition to some really serious policy challenges around health care and infrastructure. And I think what you saw was the Democrats in the Congress deciding they would go with some proven leadership. Now, look, I think Congressman Moulton's point is well taken. You now have Congresswoman Clark in a leadership position, for example, which is a plus. You have Congressman Jeffries from New York, who's new. So you are seeing some changes in leadership, not necessarily at the top. If Congresswoman Pelosi does what I think she will do, she will ensure that there's a welcome voice in leadership as she takes over.
But what do you think of Jennifer's comment here that, you know, this is basically giving Trump what he wants, right? I mean, in a way, Nancy Pelosi, she says, is the perfect foil for Trump, being the San Francisco liberal. I mean,
well, the only thing I would sort of respectfully disagree here, I mean, the Democrats just took over Congress. She's the leader of Democrats.
No, they took over the House. Let's be clear.
Okay, the House of Representatives, of course.
We're actually doing pretty well in the Senate.
Sure, but that was Nancy Pelosi's leadership. I mean, she made sure that the members of the House that were running messaged and ran not just against Donald Trump, but also around health care, which was a main pocketbook issue for many people. Democrats did very well in the House. So I'd respectfully disagree that Nancy Pelosi is good for Donald Trump. The data doesn't bear that
well,
out.
Well, I don't know that Nancy Pelosi was the decisive factor in individual races. Who knows? But it goes both ways. I mean, when the Republicans ran a nationalized congressional campaign with Newt Gingrich in 94, I believe it was, there were arguments that they took over the House because of the leadership of Newt Gingrich. At the same time, Newt Gingrich became a very polarizing figure and somebody that the Democrats could run against. So there are pros and cons to that, but Moulton's point goes beyond that. His point is that the Democratic Party needs younger leadership and that they should be training and grooming the next generation of leaders. But instead, what you saw was a vote for power rather than progress. Mm.
But what do you think of this whole idea? I mean, do you think there's a big division
within the Democratic Party?
Mm. How do you compare it? How do you compare the two parties now, right now, in terms of unity?
Yes, I do think there's a division within the Democratic Party, as there is within the Republican Party, although I think those divisions in terms of elected leadership are becoming less so. So in other words, the voters within the Democratic Party, I think, are very divided, and the voters in the Republican Party are very divided. But the Republicans essentially just consolidated their power in Congress because the anti-Trump Republicans either retired or were defeated. And so it's now a more Trumpy party than it was before the election. I think the same thing is happening on the left, where you have more radical members of Congress in the Democratic Party that are far to the left, I think, of the average Democratic voter. And the more moderate Democrats and the conservative Democrats are nowhere to be found.
If we just go back to leadership again in Washington, Massachusetts Congressman, I just want to bring this up because I'm curious about your thoughts, Senator Warren. Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch originally signed a letter against Nancy Pelosi and then went to support her. How important do you think is that change of heart?
I think it's very important. I think it shows that Congressman Pelosi is listening, that she's taking into account the concerns that people have about her leadership. You're seeing that movement across the board with a number of people. I just want to go back to, look, I don't fault Congressman Moulton for calling for new generational leadership. I also don't fault him for making sure that the next sort of generation leaders are ready to lead at all. And I actually think it's a healthy thing. That challenge is a healthy thing, and I think will make Congressman Pelosi a stronger leader. So this conversation, I think, will go on through 2020, and I think it's a good one, and I think it's a healthy one for the Democratic Party to have as we look at who our next presidential nominee might be.
I do think if there's one thing to be learned from the election of Donald Trump in 2016 is that the country is in a very anti-establishment mood. And that cuts across both parties. I think there are a lot of people out there who feel that the elite or the people who have been in power for too long have forgotten about them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think that's something that, you know, Nancy Pelosi may have, you know, lived to you know, for another day, to fight another day. But in the long run, I think the party needs to think about that. Mm-hmm. Both parties do.
One more member of the delegation here, Congresswoman Catherine Clark. She was named Democratic Caucus Vice Chair. And here she is talking about what she sees as her legislative priorities.
People talked about health care. That was the main concern of my constituents and what we saw as a driving issue in the midterm elections. They're worried about protecting Social Security and Medicare that was threatened by the Republicans. They're concerned about getting corruption out of politics and making sure that our elections are transparent in who is funding them. And they are interested in finally having a Congress that will do something about gun violence. Hmm.
So, Jennifer Becerra, I mean, you talked about people perhaps feeling as if they, those in power have forgotten about them. Those sound like legislative priorities that would appear most folks would want in their Congress.
I suppose. I mean, I do think that the smart move would be to start off the legislative calendar with something like infrastructure that could be more bipartisan than healthcare typically has been in the past. I mean, healthcare is something that concerns voters in both parties, but the solutions that they advocate are very, very different.
All right, let's shift gears to some local topics before we run out of time. Boston Police Commissioner William Gross, he took some criticism over a Facebook post that he posted last weekend expressing frustration with an American Civil Liberties Union lawsuit against the Boston Police Department. We have a little bit of tape here from Gross. He says this was a private Facebook message.
And my post on my private page to my private friends is taken out of context by some.
So in this post, Gross calls the ACLU, quote, paper warriors. He accused the ACLU of always, quote, always hiding and waiting for a slow news day to justify their existence. And on Tuesday, after he started to get some flack from the post, he told reporters that he wished the ACLU would show some empathy.
Can you walk a mile in our shoes? Can you walk a couple of steps?
And then Boston Mayor Marty Walsh said he thinks Gross has made the city safer.
It's about making sure that mothers don't get a phone call from the commissioner or myself saying that a violent act happened on the street.
And the mayor says even though he supports the ACLU, he stands by his commissioner.
That's their job. Their job is to fight and protect people, and our job is to make sure that people feel safe in the communities.
So we'll talk a little bit about this lawsuit that elicited this response from the commissioner. But first, let's start with this Facebook post and someone, a police commissioner, saying that this was a private post on my page with about 4,000 followers, including journalists. And what about this? Is this something that he should have been more careful about? Your thoughts, anyone?
Look, as a former mayor who had many police officers working for the city of Newton under my leadership, I know that police officers risk their lives every single day when they go out on calls. And I also know it's a really tough job. That being said, the ACLU does excellent work in protecting people, particularly undocumented people. I've worked with them very closely. I understand why the commissioner was frustrated, because he's looking out for his officers and the dangerous work that they do. So I get it. I am hopeful, and what I'd love to see is for the commissioner and members of the ACLU actually sit down and have a dialogue, because both are coming from places of protection of people and safety. And so I would love to see those two entities come together and really dialogue, not via Facebook posts, but in person.
Are you surprised? Well, I'm sorry, Jennifer, one second. Seth, are you surprised that the commissioner would make this kind of a comment on Facebook?
You know, I couldn't speak whether I'm surprised or not, but here's what I would say. The frustration that he clearly displayed on Facebook, you know, I've worked with officers before, and I know, I mean, their jobs are just so very difficult. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are risking their lives when they go on calls. They don't know what they're going to see. So I suspect that the commissioner was the venting was around from that perspective. So that being said, I think that staying off of Facebook and having a live dialogue in this regard is a good thing to do and would be a good thing to do.
Jennifer.
Well, it's hard to have a live dialogue with somebody who's suing you. And that is what the ACLU is doing, and that is what he's responding to. The notion that a Facebook post is private is silly, right? Anything that you put out on social media nowadays, you have to be aware that it's for public consumption. That said, I think it would have been perfectly appropriate for him to say it in a press conference or an editorial op-ed in the Boston Globe. And on the merits, I think he's absolutely right. I think the ACLU, yes, they do a lot of good work, but on this particular issue, I think they're wrong. And I think most of them, he's right, that most of them sit in their lily white towns of Weston and Concord and Duxbury or Brookline, and they're not on the streets with where these crimes are being committed. And they say that they want to find out about racial profiling. But the biggest racial disparity of all is the disparity in victimhood. Because people of color are disproportionately impacted by violent crime in this country, particularly in the city of Boston. And that is what the commissioner is concerned about.
But you're being sued for information in this lawsuit regarding a Boston police practice. And it's not unusual for the American Civil Liberties Union to make sure that folks' civil liberties are protected by those in power. That's the goal of the group. So there will be an inherent conflict. Is there an inherent misunderstanding here of what the roles are on both sides, really?
The lawsuit itself is a question of whether or not these documents that explain how the police force classify people as members of gangs, whether those documents are public records. And that, I don't know how it will turn out. But the notion that that the Boston Police Department is doing something wrong in classifying people, whether or not they're classifying people in ways that end up with disparate racial outcomes, I think is a larger conversation that we need to have, because the real racial disparity is in the victimhood rates. And that's what the ACLU doesn't focus on. They focus on racial disparities in arrests.
Again, but because we're talking about people's civil liberties when confronted by those in power. That's their mission, you know. They're not supposed to have a different mission, I think. Right?
I understand
and
that.
I think
and the
that's
mission,
what they would
and
say.
The mission of the police force is to keep the people of the city of Boston safe.
But when they are in power, somebody has to be the check on that power, right?
Sure. I mean, yes, somebody has to be the check on the power. And there are lots of checks and balances in our system, including advocacy groups like the ACLU. But that doesn't mean that the commissioner can't have an opinion about this particular lawsuit.
Another thing, though, that happened, this whole flap went on to spill into the op-ed pages of the Boston Globe, where Michael O'Keefe, the district attorney for the Cape and the Islands, wrote an op-ed about the American Civil Liberties Union. I don't know if either of you caught it, but I'll quote you one sentence here. And he said, "The ACLU represents criminals in the community, not the hardworking majority of people trying to raise their kids in safety." And he said many in law enforcement share the views of Commissioner Gross. Seth Warren, what's your reaction to that?
Look, the ACLU is charged with protecting people's civil liberties. And by actually asking for this public accounting of the scoring system and allowing for people who are being ranked and their representation within this scoring system, and understanding why, I think, are reasonable questions. And look, I don't know how this is going to turn out, how it's going to be adjudicated, but I do believe there is room for asking questions. And this is where I say I would hope that the commissioner, I'd love the commissioner to reach out to ACLU and have a dialogue. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that you have ACLU trying to protect people's rights, and I think you have a commissioner that's trying to protect public safety, and it would be a great thing if they could sit down and come to an understanding.
Well, both have been quoted as saying that they are willing to sit down. So mm-hmm. we'll see if anything comes from that. But I want to make sure we have time now to talk about health care, because that was also in the news this week. Of course, Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey signed off on the deal between Beth Israel Deaconess and Leahy Health. The State Health Policy Commission reported over the summer that this merger could have led to price hikes totaling between $158 and $231 million. So there are some provisions put in there to try to make sure that health care costs don't soar out of control. And Attorney General Healey says because of the strong provisions that this entire deal is a good one for the Commonwealth.
This settlement requires BI Leahy to cap its prices and make real investments that will help our residents access high-quality health care.
So is this a good deal? Your thoughts, Steady Warren.
I think we'll have to see. Look, you know, I've talked to some people in the field, and I've seen healthcare costs rise in my own city. This merger, typically through these mergers, there is a rise in cost. The Attorney General, I think, did the shrewd and smart thing in putting provisions in place, putting caps in place on cost, making sure there's access for low-income people. I think we're going to have to really pay close attention and measure to see from a quarterly basis and an annual basis what reality is. This is new to Massachusetts, this type of structure that's been in place. So I think we'll have to see. I think the jury's still out, but I do believe the Attorney General did the right thing and trying to put a deal together.
And this was a major, major deal. Jennifer, what are your thoughts?
I agree. I mean, I think time will tell, and I think it seems like a reasonable deal, and it seems as if, you know, hopefully the consumers will benefit. You know, one of the criticisms of the merger to begin with was that it gave too much power to this one entity, but at the same time, it actually allows BI Leahy to compete on an equal footing with partners, which I think will spur competition and ultimately, I hope, bring prices down.
Okay. We've got just enough time left, I think, for our hubbubs. Okay, those brief stories that caught our attention this week maybe didn't make it to the top of the fold. Do we still say top of the fold, or am I dating myself here?
I think we're dating ourselves.
Okay, Seti Warren, what's your hubbub this week?
How this Citco sign being protected,
yeah.
The cross from Fenway Park. Who would have thought that this old Citco sign would generate this much attention? There's a deal that developers and the mayor came together of the property and said we will protect it. And as a lifelong Red Sox fan, I am very grateful to it. It's a part of the character of Boston.
I agree that it's part of the character of Boston, but I do share the concerns of the Venezuelan community about what it symbolizes in terms of the authoritarian nature of that regime.
Do you have a hubbub?
I have a hubbub that I've been holding for a long time because every time I come here, we don't seem to get to it. But I've wanted to give a shout out to a new website called abridgenews.com, which is a really cool website that is a product of Harvard Business School, a woman named Laura Carpenter who graduated from there last year. And she put together this site where you get four opinions every day from the left, right, and center on one big news issue of the day. And it's a really great way to see a spectrum of opinion and figure out what you might think on an issue without just getting one perspective. So I think in an era of, you know, fake news and divided politics, it's good for people to see other sides. And I would encourage everybody to look at Abridged News.
All right. Jennifer Braceras, political consultant and senior fellow for legal policy with the Independent Women's Forum. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Seti Warren, former mayor of Newton. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Stay with us. Coming up, author Jarrett Krasoska on his new graphic memoir about how the opioid epidemic affected his family. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.